Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's conference call with Governor Andrew Cuomo. I will now turn it over to Governor Cuomo. Thank you, and go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, operator. And thank you, guys, for getting on, guys being gender neutral. We're joined today by Melissa DeRosa, Secretary of the Governor, Rob Mojica, Budget Director, Beth Garvey, Special Counsel, Gareth Rhodes, who is Deputy Superintendent DFS, who works with us, Dr. Zucker. I also have members from the Long Island delegation of the Assembly and the Senate for an announcement that I'm going to make, and then we'll hear from them. If you guys could put your phone on mute now, I'd appreciate it, just so we don't have a lot of background noise. Today is day 242. For those people who are counting, we did 129,000 tests yesterday. The positivity in the micro cluster focus zones, right? We're doing two sets of tests. We test the micro cluster zones, and then we test statewide. In the micro clusters, the rate was 3.8%. That's in Brooklyn, Queens, Rockland, Orange, right? And we're also looking at Broome, Steuben, and Chemung. The positivity rate statewide without the inclusion of the microcluster zones is 1.3. That's actually down from 1.5. The overall statewide number, including the oversample of the microclusters, is 1.5. That's down from 1.78. Okay? We said with these microclusters and the overall state number, you will see a day-to-day bouncing. This is when I said we're playing whack-a-mole with the microclusters, which was not the most scientifically accurate term. But it's what it feels like from my point of view. You get a microcluster that flares up, we attack it, more restrictions, it drops, another microcluster pops up. And what we're seeing, obviously, nationwide is a very threatening rate of increase. And so far, knock wood, New York has defied that rate of increase. The 15 New Yorkers passed away yesterday, and they are in our thoughts and prayers. 1,085 hospitalized, which is just about flat, 236 in ICU. In terms of adjustments of the microcluster, Orange County has made very good progress. So have other microclusters, but in terms of changing the restrictions, in Orange County, we're going to change the red zone to an orange zone. In Orange County, the red zone was at 12% 3 weeks ago. It's now 2%. So that's obviously dramatic progress. And the hospitalization number is flat. So the red zone will go to orange. The yellow zone will stay yellow. There has been progress in other areas in microclusters, but nothing at this point that would cause us to change any classifications this week. And we'll watch it over the next week for possible alterations next week. Nationwide, our positivity rate, we are now the second lowest in the United States of America. We've actually made progress nationwide. We are 1.3%. And in the Johns Hopkins nationwide state survey, we are number two from the bottom, second lowest rate in the nation. Only Maine is lower than we are. Maine doesn't test every day. They have more of a periodic testing regimen. But besides Maine, it then goes New York at 1.3. Above us is New Hampshire 1.5, Massachusetts 1.59, D.C. 1.6, Hawaii 2.2. Top of the list, South Dakota, 43%. Idaho, 34%. Wyoming, 31%. Wisconsin, 27%. Iowa, 26%. Alabama, 25%. Nebraska, 21%. Pennsylvania, 12%. North Dakota, 10%. I mean, these numbers are really incredible. Alaska, 7%. Georgia, 7%. Delaware, 7%. North Carolina, 6.9%. Michigan, 5%. So, New York, second lowest, only to Maine. Congratulations, New Yorkers. God bless New Yorkers. A couple of specific announcements. Talking about the nationwide increase, which, by the way, was predicted by the scientists. They said it would get worse when it came to the fall. We prepared our fall strategy, which is the microcluster strategy. People are asking if we have a travel ban. We do not have a travel ban in the state of New York. We never said people can't travel out of the state or into the state. You can travel wherever you want to travel, whenever you want to travel. There is no travel ban. There is a quarantine policy that we have in effect. But you can go travel wherever you want for Thanksgiving or for any holiday that you choose to travel. If you're asking advice, I have said publicly that I think my personal advice is you don't have family gatherings even for Thanksgiving. My personal advice is the best way to say I love you this Thanksgiving, the best way to say I'm thankful for you is to say I love you so much, I'm so thankful for you that I don't want to endanger you. And I don't want to endanger our family, and I don't want to endanger our friends. So we'll celebrate virtually. But that is my personal opinion. Factually, legally, New Yorkers can travel wherever they want. People can come into the state, but you have to live within the quarantine policy. My personal advice is based on the fact that more and more we're seeing spread from small gatherings. Our problem at one time was large gatherings, bars, restaurants, right? And we had significant enforcement efforts on that. We're now getting it from small gatherings. We have a wedding that was in Genesee, Orleans area. 18 people, 18 cases from one wedding. A church in Lewis County, which is not a highly dense county in upstate New York, 57 cases from one gathering. We had a birthday party in Suffolk, 22 positives already from one birthday party. So it's these small gatherings that are creating issues. A small Thanksgiving gathering. Well, it was just my, you know, the 12 members of my extended family. I know. But that could be dangerous. But again, that's personal opinion. You can do it if you want to do it. Next point. In our school plan, we had left it to the local school districts to determine whether or not children needed to wear a mask. I spoke to County Executive George Latimer, Westchester County, who's a very good guy. And he asked, can the county impose a mask mandate on the students in schools in the county? Can they have that authority? And I agreed. I think the county executive is right. His point is he's seeing numbers go up, not as bad in Westchester, frankly, as other parts, but he wants to have his county Department of Health impose a mask mandate on schools in the county. And the state will allow county governments, city governments, to impose a mask mandate on students in those counties. So we will do that. And then it'll be up to the county government. It will be up to a city government if they wanted to impose a mask mandate on students in their schools. So we're going to do that. Next point is the vaccination. We have to get through the fall. What happens after the fall, the winter? What happens in the winter? It's going to be the vaccination, season of the vaccine. Everyone is focused on when the drug companies will come up with a vaccine. Is it November? Is it December? Is it January? Who knows? How much pressure is, political pressure is being applied to the FDA to approve the vaccine? That is an issue. My point is, once the vaccine is created, that is only the first step. The drug companies will create a vaccine as soon as they can because that's the business they're in. And the economic incentives for the first company that has the vaccine, or the first few companies, is phenomenal, right? We're talking about billions of dollars for whatever drug company is successful. I have no doubt that they're working 24 hours a day to develop a vaccine. I have no doubt that the president will pressure the FDA to approve a vaccine as expeditiously as possible, if not recklessly. But then, how do you administer the vaccine? That's the real question. And let's learn the lesson from the first phase of this pandemic. Where government has struggled is in implementation and execution. We have to do testing. Yes, but then the how was the problem. How do we implement vaccinations for 330 million people? The governors across the country sent questions to the president through the National Governors Association. We sent 35 questions. How do we do this? And thus far, we've gotten no answers from the White House. If you listen to the federal government, the president says he's going to develop the vaccine, and then the generals will be in charge. Yes, but the generals will be in charge, and the way they define the mission is the generals will deliver the vaccines to the state. Yeah, so the governors say, okay, once again, you're going to turn everything over to the states. And then the federal government wipes its hands. How do the states do this? I've done 12 million COVID tests in 7 months, more than anyone else. I then have to do 20 million vaccinations. And by the way, I have to do them twice. And by the way, the vaccine has to be kept in a deep freeze. And by the way, I haven't gotten any state and local funding. And by the way, if we don't get state and local funding, we're going to have to lay off essential workers. And the essential workers are the ones who we need to do the vaccines. So that is the looming debacle for this nation. And we need people to focus on that point. And it hasn't happened thus far. Next point. In the midst of all this, we have other work that we have to do at the same time. We have had an ongoing issue with utility companies, and it has been getting worse, not better. Now, New Yorkers are fair people, smart people, they're open-minded people, but New Yorkers will not be bullied, and the utility companies have been bullying the people in the state of New York. I believe that. They have an attitude that they're too big to fail, that there's nothing that the consumer can do. And many of these utility companies, not all, but many, have been abusive to the consumer. Remember, it's the consumer that pays the utility bill, and the consumer has a right to expect service for their payment. That's how life works. Every time we have a storm, we've had excessive delays in loss of power. It's gone on for weeks. The utility companies all say the same thing. Well, we had a storm. Yeah, I know. And we pay the utility company to be prepared for a storm. It doesn't say on the bill we only provide power on sunny days. You pay a bill 365 days a week, a year. And if there's a storm, they have to be prepared for it. And yes, the snow falls on the branch and the ice falls on the branch and the branch breaks and the branch hits the wire and the wire comes down. I know. But that's what we pay them to do. And we've had excessive delays all across the state, but especially in downstate, especially in New York City, and especially Long Island, because Long Island is prone to storms, right, just by its geographic location. And we've gone around and around, and now it's time to take dramatic action. The recourse for government is basically twofold. One, when a utility company doesn't perform repeatedly, we can penalize them, which the PSC has been doing. Or two, if it is repeated and serious, we can revoke the franchise. God did not give the utility company the franchise. The people of the state gave the utility company the right to operate. If the people of the state allowed a utility company to operate, the people of the state can revoke their right to operate. So you have a penalty or you have a revocation. Both are very hard to affect right now by the current law. And we need to change the law. On the penalties, the penalties by law are limited to either $100,000 per incident or 0.02 of 1% of annual intrastate gross operating revenue, capped at $500,000 or 0.04 of 1%. Why? Why is there a legal cap on the penalty? The penalty should be commensurate with the damage done by the utility company. This law was done for the utility companies years ago. So you can be penalized, but there's a cap on the penalty that you can receive. What has happened is the penalty has just become a cost of doing business. That's what it is. I said once before, not everybody was on the phone. I spoke to a delivery company that was amassing tremendous parking violations. The delivery company would always just double park the truck or park in an illegal zone to go deliver the package. And they'd get a parking ticket. And they paid the parking ticket. But it was creating a real traffic problem. And the delivery company basically said to me, look, we'd rather pay the parking ticket than change our delivery mechanism because it's cheaper to pay the parking ticket. It's cheaper for these utility companies just to pay these limited capped penalties than to actually change their behavior. So every storm, there's an investigation, they get charged a penalty, the penalty has a cap, they pay the penalty, they go about their business. Change the law, remove the cap, they should pay a penalty that is commensurate with the damage, period. Second change, well, we'll revoke the franchise. When you go to revoke the franchise, the utility claims that they own the infrastructure, meaning the pipes, the wires, generators, the poles. So if you revoke the franchise, their point is, well, we own all the infrastructure, which makes it all but impossible to revoke the franchise. No, they don't own the infrastructure. The infrastructure was paid for by the ratepayer. When they put in new pipes, that cost goes into the rate. If the ratepayers paid for the infrastructure, then it should be owned by the ratepayers. And the utility should not have the right to profit from it, especially if they're having the franchise revoked. To the extent their shareholders paid or invested, fine. Give them back their shareholder money. But on a revocation, they have no right to profit from the infrastructure paid for by the consumers in the rate. So the law would change that also. Third change in the law, the rate reimburses the utility for the expenses. Right now, there is no salary cap. So if they pay the head of the utility $10 million, the ratepayers pay $10 million. It goes into the cost of the utility. The PSC should set a salary cap that the ratepayers will only pay up to X for salaries. If the utility wants to pay someone multiple millions of dollars, let the shareholders pay the CEO. But the ratepayers shouldn't do that. And then there's a specific situation. This would apply to utilities all across the state. But again, Long Island has had specific issues. And there's a specific issue with a company in Long Island called American Water, which I know, frankly, from my time back as Attorney General. The PSC in this bill must look at the American Water situation. The differential on what American Water charges is just astronomical. For example, a water bill for the same size house or property in Glenhead can be $2,400. In Jericho, it can be $500. All right? There's also been significant questions about the safety and quality of the water that American Water Company has been providing. This bill says PSC has to review two options. One, the municipalization of American Water, or two, the revocation of the franchise of American Water. And if the franchise is revoked, it will be revoked with the provision that the infrastructure paid for by the ratepayers will stay with the state and the ratepayers, and it is not an asset of American Water. To the extent American Water shareholders paid, fine. But this has to end. The abuse of the utilities has to end. They're not too big to fail. They're not going to bully consumers. It's over. And look, I have said to them a number of times in a number of different ways, they have to perform a better service. After every storm, it's the same thing. And it can be Con Ed, it can be PSE&G, it can be RG&E, it can be any of them. It's all been the same. And the consumer has had no real recourse because the law limits the penalty and they don't fear revocation because they think it's an impossibility. Taking on the utilities is no small feat. They are very powerful. They have a lot of money. They have big lobbyists. They make numerous campaign contributions. They're very connected to the local community. They're one of the great institutional powers in society. This is going to greatly disrupt the utilities, and they are going to push back very hard. Why doesn't government make change? Because when you take on powerful institutions that are making billions of dollars, they fight back. The Long Island delegation and I have spent time working together on this, and they are committed to making this happen in their respective bodies. And they're going to co-sponsor this legislation with me. And I want to thank them. At this time, I want to ask representatives to make a statement, and then I'll go through the delegation that's on the phone just to affirm that they're going to co-sponsor the legislation. But let's first hear from Senator Gorin, then we'll hear from Senator Kevin Thomas, then we'll hear from Assemblyman Chuck Levine. Jim, do you want to start, Senator Gorin?
Thank you very much, Governor, and it's a pleasure to join everybody today, even though we're socially distanced. I want to thank my colleagues and the legislature for joining as well. It has been a pleasure to work with you, and Long Islanders, New York, can rest assured that we are in good hands working on these and so many other problems. Especially want to thank the Governor for being the leading force behind this legislation. I've worked in government for years, and I can say definitively, this bill will fundamentally flip the power dynamic, and it will take us one step closer to a major win for the ratepayers. As a longtime believer that access to clean, safe drinking water is a human right, all citizens should have access to public water. I am thrilled that today we are taking the necessary steps forward to stop private water companies from profiting off the backs of Long Islanders. Utilities do not have a mandate. They are legally required to provide adequate and reliable service that is in the public interest, just as the governor has said. And they have dropped the ball for way too long. The legislation drastically reforms how we regulate utilities by providing PSC with new tools and oversight authority to hold them accountable. Let it be known that today, Governor Cuomo has put public utilities on notice. It's a major win for New Yorkers, a major win for Long Islanders, and I couldn't be prouder to be a sponsor. Come this time next year, we will have passed this bill that holds public utilities accountable to the people. On behalf of the Long Island delegation, Governor, we are all prepared to co-sponsor and pass this legislation. Again, I thank you very much for this and for your leadership.
Now, Senator, thank you. Thank you for, look, it's a difficult issue, and you're right. It's been a long-term issue. This American water situation specifically, we've been talking about for years. So it's my pleasure to work with you, and we will get it done. And I like your pledge by this time next year, maybe even sooner. Senator Kevin Thomas, are you with us, Senator?
Thank you. Yes, I am. Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Senator Gorin, and thank you all. It's a pleasure to be here today. It truly is a huge day for both New York State and Long Island. I want to start by thanking my fellow sponsors of this legislation. And most importantly, I want to thank Governor Cuomo, whose leadership and political will have made today possible. Working alongside you to make this bill a reality has been a privilege, and I believe this legislation will truly be transformational. As the governor mentioned, for far too long, utility companies have abused the trust that ratepayers and the state have put in them, particularly here on Long Island. In August, the superstorm ravaged the island for weeks. Thousands of New Yorkers got excuses instead of electricity. These superstorms are the new normal, and it's high time that our public utilities uphold their end of the bargain by delivering safe and reliable service to ratepayers, or pay the price. As chairman of the Consumer Protection Committee, I have fought to be a driving force to strengthen consumer protections and safeguards, and I can confidently say this bill will fundamentally change the way public utilities do business in the Empire State. While there is much more work to be done, today is a major leap forward. I again want to thank the governor for making it all possible. This legislation will be a top priority for us next session, and we will get it done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Thomas. And that's a great expression. You said it well. New York, for too long, New Yorkers have been getting excuses instead of electricity. That really sums it up. I'm going to appropriate that line, just so you know. Thank you very much. And Assemblymember Charles Levine, Chuck, thank you for all the time and all the effort and all the energy on this. Assemblyman Levine.
Thank you, Governor. It's a pleasure. It really is an honor to be here today with all of you. I want to make a special point of thanking Governor Cuomo for proposing this legislation and leading our efforts to hold public utilities accountable once and for all. Our laws as they currently stand put arbitrary limits on penalties while lacking the enforcement authority to oversee other regulated entities, including private water companies, cable companies, and telecommunications providers. By reforming and modernizing the enforcement structure and extending penalty authority to other public utilities, we've provided new tools to ensure that utilities who for too long have abused their power, in particular American Water, which serves large parts of Nassau County, including the district I am privileged to represent, will finally be forced to live up to their legal obligation and provide quality, affordable services to our citizens. This legislation also forces the Public Service Commission to study whether large areas of Long Island should come under municipal control to improve water delivery service while ensuring an easy transition to a new public utility. Again, I want to thank you, Governor Cuomo, for your leadership, and working together, we will get this legislation done. Thanks so very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Assemblymember Levine. This, as I mentioned, is this bill is going to have tremendous statewide impact because it's every utility in the state. But, as I mentioned, why hasn't this been done in the past? Because the utility companies are a formidable foe, and do not underestimate the amount of pressure and influence they're going to exert to stop this legislation. I believe with the Long Island delegation united and committed that that will be the energy necessary to push this bill through. And that's why I'm very excited that you have this Senate and Assembly coalition that is committed to making this a priority for themselves to get it done. And we have them all on the phone, and we've heard from some of them, but let me just thank them all for their participation, and I'm going to go through who's with us so you see the strength that this is going to have in the legislature. We heard from Senator Jim Gorin, and he's all in, and he knows this. He's worked on water authorities, and he knows how this business works. Senator Todd Kominski, are you with us?
Yes, Governor. Of course, Governor. Thank you.
Okay. Senator John Brooks.
Yes, Governor. Thank you, and thank you for your efforts.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John. Senator Anna Kaplan.
Yes, Governor. Thank you. I'm all in with you and my Senate colleagues and Assembly colleagues.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you very much. We have Assemblywoman Judy Griffin with us.
Governor Cuomo, thank you for your leadership, and I am all in and happy to work with the coalition on this.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you very much. Thank you for everything. Assemblywoman Mikhail Salajas.
Yes, Governor. This is a very exciting day. Long time coming. Thank you so much.
It has been, but it is exciting, and we're going to get this done. And we have Assemblywoman Taylor Darling. Taylor, darling. We do not have Assemblywoman Taylor, darling, or we have a technical issue. I had a conversation with the Assemblywoman, and she said she's supportive, but we'll figure out the issue. Senator Monica Martinez is not with us, but I spoke to her this morning. Unfortunately, she had a passing in her family, and she's in our thoughts and prayers, and her family's in our thoughts and prayers, but she also supports it. And I believe there's going to be widespread support in the legislature. But again, there's going to be tremendous opposition from these utility companies. But they're not going to beat us on this one. You have my word on that. Thank you, my colleagues from the Senate and the Assembly. Thank you very much for joining us today. And let's turn it over now to take whatever press questions we may have. Thank you all very much for joining me, though, today. Thank you.
Okay, as a reminder, to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. Again, that's star and the number 1 to ask a question. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A roster. Thank you. One moment, please. We have our first question from the line of Mr. Mark Harrington from Newsday. Your line is now open. Thank you.
Mr. Harrington?
Sir, your line is now open.
Mr. Harrington? Mark Harrington? Harrington Mark. Who's there?
Hello, are you there?
Yes, sir. How are you, Mark?
Very good. Sorry about that. My mute button is mislocated. Anyway, good morning. PSEG Long Island is not regulated by the PSC directly. How is PSEG covered in this bill? Are there any allowances made for the fact that it has a contract as opposed to a PSC, full PSC authority?
Yeah, you're right. Technically, PSEG has a management contract through LIPA. But this law will be binding on LIPA and therefore will pass through LIPA to PSEG. But I have Beth Garvey on the phone. Let me just make sure what I said was correct.
Yes, Governor, that's correct. And then also we would require that for a service provider that is contracted by a public authority, that the PSC could make a recommendation to that public authority to take action in the course of their investigation, they determine that there are determined two or more repeated failures by that service provider. They would make a recommendation to the board to exercise their termination rights.
So, Mark, it's PSC to LIPA, and then LIPA enforces it against PSEG. Next question.
Our next question is from the line of Ms. Joliet Papa from 1010 Winds Radio. Your line is now open.
How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Governor. How you doing?
Long time no see.
Yes, likewise. Thank you. So my question involves the run-up to the election. We saw this violent demonstration in Brooklyn last night. There was vandalism, property damage, 30 arrests. How concerned are you about what will be taking place either, you know, toward Election Day, post-Election Day, and what are your plans for addressing that?
There's no doubt there's a lot of energy, which in some ways is a good thing. The lines on for voting are just incredible all across the country. And I think this is probably the most emotional election that we have had. We've had passion before, but nothing like what I've seen here. We have about a week to go. I think what has happened in New York City, the Board of Elections, enough is enough. And sometimes you reach a tipping point where you have enough energy to change the status quo. This utility bill we're talking about is an example of that. How many times have we said to Con Ed, how many times have you heard me say to Con Ed, enough is enough, right? But to change the whole system is hard. How many times has the Board of Elections in New York City proven incompetent? But I think this was the tipping point, and it has to change. And it has to change now. And New York City has to come up with an alternative to the Board of Elections. And as long as it's an intelligent alternative, I will work night and day to get it done. Obviously, the line is criminal behavior versus peaceful demonstration. And there's no tolerance for criminal behavior, especially in New York City. It's a fragile circumstance. And the law is the law, and we're going to enforce the law. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Mr. Dan Clark from PBS. Your line is now open.
Hi, Governor. How are you?
Good. How are we doing, Brother Dan?
Very good, thank you. We talked a little bit earlier this week, not you and me, obviously, but in general about the outbreak at Elmira Correctional down in, Elmira, obviously. Today we're up to almost 600 cases confirmed in the prison. And some advocates have been calling for you to possibly grant clemency to some of the older inmates or people that are vulnerable to the disease. Is that something that you're considering, or is that off the table?
I'll ask Melissa for further details. First, Dan, you have to keep this in context, right? The Department of Corrections, which by definition operates congregate settings, that has been a target for COVID, right? By and large. And the Department of Corrections has done a phenomenal job. Their infection rate is lower than the general population infection rate. Now, there is a problem in Elmira. We are already addressing, taking special measures for members of the population who may be vulnerable, right? People who are immune compromised, people who are older. They're getting additional safety precautions within the facility. Docs is also considering if they have a person who could be especially vulnerable, transferring the person from Elmira to another facility. They have a host of safety precautions that they're taking. We have already done clemencies several times and been very aggressive about it, especially in light of COVID. But in the case of Elmira, again, special precautions for people within the facility who may be vulnerable. Also, if we can't do that, transferring people to a safe site. But let me ask Melissa if she has any updates beyond that.
No, Governor, everything you said is exactly right. And just to put a fine point on it, since March, DOCS has released 3,057 inmates, 791 who were in prison for low-level parole violations, 2,254 who committed nonviolent, non-sex offenses who are within 90 days of release and 55 and over, and women who were pregnant or recently gave birth who are within 180 days of release. So out of an inmate population of 36,000, which, by the way, is the lowest it's been since 1986, and half of what it was at the state peak in 1999, 33,000 that have already been released is a significant percentage. We're obviously always evaluating on an ongoing basis to see if there's better ways to improve and if there are other additional opportunities, but we are trying to balance the need for public safety and public health. And on the case of Elmira specifically, well over 90% of the cases, as you're aware, at this point are asymptomatic, but we'll continue to have docs release daily updates on that so that you're all informed. Thank you.
Okay. I believe Assemblymember Taylor Darling has rejoined us. And the question to Assemblymember Darling was if she supports this reform legislation for utilities. Are you there, Taylor?
I am here. I'm so sorry, Governor. I'm at three press conferences right now, but I definitely support this legislation. this legislation is an answer to the cries of our constituents. Actually, I am at the Hispanic Heritage Center in Hempstead, and we have a woman here with three children whose utilities were just shut off. So this is real life, and I want to thank you. I want to thank my colleagues for their courage and proactivity, and I fully support the legislation. I can't wait till next session. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Assembly Member. That's the entire Long Island delegation. Operator, we'll take one more question.
All right. Our last question is from the line of Ms. Marie French from Politico. Your line is now open. Thank you.
Hi.
How are you, Marie? How have you been?
Pretty good, considering. I guess, you know, this legislation, you know, you've talked about it before. Are you also looking at, with this legislation and, you know, as your administration sort of considers the options, how the utilities can invest in their systems to improve, you know, the reliability? Or is this mostly focused on changing the process so that the utilities will be more responsive for enforcement?
No, Marie, they can. This is, look, we've gone around and around with them on this, right? Hurricane Sandy was 8 years ago, right? So it's not like we just started this conversation. We have encouraged them to come up with more resiliency, more emergency services. And we said we will pay for that. And we have paid for that. You know, it's not that they do anything that doesn't get included in the rate. So you want to have backup systems, we have to pay for backup generation, we have to pay to bury lines, we have to pay for more trucks and more crews to be on call. That goes into the rate. And I said to the people of the state, look, you want faster service, you want emergency preparation, because we need it in this new world, we're going to have to pay for it. And we have, and we've encouraged the utilities to do that. My problem is we both paid for the emergency service and the resiliency and the backup service, and we still don't get it. They have been getting increases in their rates, right? But the service, the service still isn't there. And then we just went through another storm, especially in Long Island. And also we've had them in Con Ed in New York City. How many times have I been in New York City walking through a burned out generator room? I've walked through more burned out generator rooms than any governor in the country, I will wager. That's the service we're paying them to provide. And if they can't, it's not that we didn't pay. We paid. They didn't provide the service. And like anything else, Marie, at one point, if you're paying for service and you're not getting the service, then they either have to give you money back, that's a penalty, or you get a new provider, right? You pay an electrician to come to your house to fix the wiring. They come once, they come twice, they come three times. You paid them each time. The wiring still doesn't work. Either they have to give you money back, or you get a new electrician, or both. And that's where we are. Under the current law, there's a cap on a penalty that makes it basically just the cost of doing business. Well, how did that get in the law? Because the utilities are very powerful in the legislature. Well, revoke the franchise. Yeah, but you really can't if they say they own the pipes and the wires and the generators, right? So this law says if we revoke, you don't own the pipes and the generators. You own them to the extent you paid for them with your money, but to the extent they were paid for by consumer money through the rate, you don't own them. So we can now revoke the franchise, right? Con Ed is not too big to fail. None of them are. Consumers are not captive of utilities. They're not. The consumers gave the utility the certificate or the franchise. And this actually empowers the people. And it's about time, because I'm just sick and tired of being sick and tired. Fannie Lou Hamer. Thank you, guys. Thank you all very much. Bye.